Welcome to On Par with Maury Povich. Today on Par, I'm joined by a man. I mean, when I tell you he's done it all, he's done it all when it comes to this business. Stage, screen, everything in between. He's an Academy Award nominee, an Emmy winner, one of the most respected actors of his generation. From Fargo and Shameless, William H. Macy has built a body of work that is as deep as it is daring. And now he's at the center of not one, not two, three new projects, which are out there hitting the big screen, plus a new series, which is going to be on Hulu in 2026. He's got my favorite, a brand new whiskey that's making headlines. William H. Macy is here with us on Par.
Oh, I'm so thrilled. I'm such a fan.
No, I'm a fan. First of all, let's talk about the name, all right? Because this is the research I've done. You were born William H. Macy, W.H. Macy.
Junior.
Right? Junior. And when you finally got your SAG card, which was big, you find out there's another Bill Macy.
Right.
And by the way, and he was a major character on the hit series called Maude.
Right.
And Bill Macy, so you couldn't take
The Late
that.
Show, he did a thing called The Late Show. He was a fabulous actor.
And you couldn't take your name.
No.
So that's where W.H. Macy comes into being.
I tried W.H. for a while, but I noticed when I went to auditions, because nobody was using W.H., you know, like D.W. Moffat. A lot of people do
it
now.
It's kind of an elevated name anyway.
Yeah, so they'd skip me. It happened often enough.
Really?
Yeah, that I would look at the list and figure out who came after me so I could go, sorry, you skipped me. And I thought, this is not a good sign.
Right.
So I sort of unilaterally made it William H. Macy. I've never heard that I can't. So there you go.
And do your friends call you Bill or not?
Bill. Or worse.
All right. Yeah. Here's the thing. You're 75 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You have three movies out at 75.
Yeah.
Think about that. I mean, does any other 75-year-old person have three movies out at the same time? I don't think so.
I wonder... Really?
No.
I don't feel 75. And,
well, I don't feel mine either.
You know what? I've had the same trainer forever, and she's such a genius. As I work out a lot, and her clientele got older, she learned what we need. And so I do a lot of balance stuff. And
balance is important.
Yeah.
I play a lot of golf. I know about balance.
I got a golf joke when we're over.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm still upright. I can still learn the lines. And there's always an Altacocker in every movie,
of
so
course.
I think there's work for me.
Yeah, and you don't mind playing old?
Well, I'd rather play the young man, but I
might
as well accept it. You know,
we're not there.
No.
So these are the three movies that are out. This is one of the big movies. It's a remake of The Running Man,
mm-hmm.
and you're in that,
mm-hmm.
and you're also in. Another movie, which, by the way,
Train
is
Dreams.
Called Soul on Fire.
Oh, Soul on Fire, right.
Where you play the very well-known, respected, late sportscaster Jack Buck.
Right.
The movie I'm very interested in is Train Dreams,
mm.
because it's gotten huge reviews. Huge. And you didn't work that long on that movie, did you?
No, I don't work long on many of the films I do. I guess I was there a week. We shot it in Washington State.
Right. And it's about the making of railroads, cutting down forests.
Loggers. It's
loggers.
About loggers.
It's about loggers.
1910.
Right.
And
this is what one of the big reviewers said of this movie. Robert, the...
Joel Edgerton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the star of the movie. Met on the tracks, an explosive expert played by William H. Macy, who makes a meal out of a snack... of a character, giving this guy decades of lived in three-dimensionality in just a few short scenes. It's an incredibly short performance, but also somehow one of Macy's best, formative to the film in that it helps ground it right when it became too shapeless. How's that?
Who is that?
That's the Roger Ebert review.
Oh.
The late Roger Ebert.
Great. Great
he was
critic.
Terrific. A friend of mine from Chicago.
Yeah, I knew Roger.
But you can do that in a short scene.
You really can. You really can. We all know movies where one person comes on and just walks away with it. I'm not saying I do that. This, I just happen to be in a fabulous film. It was beautifully well written. It's based on a novella. And the whole cast is stunning. And it's just, there's something magical about it.
And it's probably going to get a lot of nominations.
Don't tell me, tell them.
Well, I think it will. And if that review meant anything,
we're right.
Yeah, maybe there's a supporting role there for Mr. Macy. Yeah. Okay. Does everybody still think of Fargo and Shameless when it comes to you?
Sure. Sure. Fargo was, I saw it recently when we had this strike. They have this thing where you can go, you watch the film in some theater, and then you do a Q&A, and they pay you a little bit of money. And that strike went on and on. Boy, that was a rough one.
Yeah, it was terrible.
So anyway, I did it a couple of times. So I got to see it in a nice theater with a full house. It's a stunning film. Everybody in it is perfect, and it's well written. Best thing they ever wrote, Joel and Ethan. If you ask me, it's the best writing they've ever done, I mean, of a piece, and stunning film.
Did you have to, I know that accent. I know that Minnesota,
yeah,
Dakota accent. Did it take you long to master it?
We worked at it. When we got there, most of the actors, the principals, showed up a week before, and Liz Himmelstein is a vocal coach, and she worked with us. She sent tapes earlier, but I had done a season at the Guthrie Theater.
Oh, so you had been in
there
Minneapolis
for a year.
Yeah.
And it wasn't,
it's a very famous theater.
It wasn't unfamiliar to me, but it's great. After the film, Felicity and I had to say, okay, this is a no Fargies zone. We were just, that's all, that's, we talked that way all the time.
Yeah, not you betcha.
Yeah, don't you know.
Yeah. And Shameless, of course. Frank Gallagher was, I mean, that imprint will be around forever.
What a blessing that was. It was a really well-run show by John Wells. He was the grand poobah, and fabulous cast. So wrong.
So wrong?
It was so wrong.
Really?
Yeah, every show just had something you go, wait a minute, can we do this? I'm a Lutheran from Western Maryland, so yes. I would read these scripts and I'd have to call my daughters.
Right. By the way, he's from Cumberland, Maryland. You can't get any farther west in Maryland than Cumberland because it's on the border of West Virginia and almost Kentucky. It's very...
Yeah, Appalachia.
Yeah. I read this quote from you about Shameless, okay? I go to work every day. At first, I brought all my old habits, struggling with all the scenes, wanting rewrites, quizzing everything, carrying it so heavily. Because it lasted so long, I calmed down, my acting improved, and the people liked me better. All true?
Yeah.
Does that mean that you were disagreeable in the beginning?
I fear in my early days I was a jerk. Yeah. You know, just so bloody serious about everything and thought I knew everything. And the actor's disease is worrying about everybody's job. And I've since learned if you're worrying about everybody's job, you're doing a bad job on your job.
So everyone should know that Bill wanted to be, as a very young person, a vet. Mm. You wanted to be a veterinarian. Because living out there in Cumberland, I mean, you got a lot of stock.
Yeah.
And how do you end up at Goddard College in Vermont?
You pretty much fail your way to Goddard. I got a job at 14 with the local veterinarian, and I loved it, and I had a pension for it. And he really wanted me to go to vet school. My wife swears I was a dog in another life, because I'll literally see dogs walking down the street and they'll do double takes to me. You know, they'll look around and go,
oh, like, you're going to help me.
Bill, is that you? but I discovered that to become a veterinarian, you have to go to veterinary school and learn things. So that counted it out for me. I was a terrible student.
So when you end up at Goddard College, there's this fellow there. Is this happenstance that the man's name is David Mamet?
Yeah, it's just...
Really? You didn't know? Nobody knew who he was at the time?
No. My grandmother told me when I was a little kid, I'm a serendipitist, which is one to whom good things happened. And David graduated from Goddard.
He's two years older than you, I think.
Yeah. He went to New York, studied with Meisner for a year, did not get invited back, came back to teach. He's the smartest guy I've ever met. He knows more about acting than most teachers have forgotten. And he's prescient. He sees the future. He's the writer of this decade. He changed everything. When he wrote American Buffalo,
right.
Well, Sexual Perversity in Chicago, everything changed.
And it should be noted that you played in the first version of American Buffalo at the Goodman Theater in Chicago.
Yeah.
For him.
Yep.
But you didn't come to Broadway.
Nope. Didn't get that job.
Did you try?
I tried. We were pretty cocky in Chicago. It was called it's called Off-Loop Theater, and there was a bit of a renaissance there. There were a lot of
And this was the days
theaters.
Of Second City, too, right?
Yeah, Second City, Steppenwolf, St. Nick, which was my theater, Remains Theater. There were a bunch of them. You could go to the theater for 2 weeks straight and not go to the same theater. And they all had companies, and they were doing beautiful work. And we were pretty snotty about New York, thinking, I don't need to go to New York.
Right.
This is better theater than New York.
Well, guess what?
Yeah.
That's what they felt in Second City.
Yeah.
They didn't need New York.
No.
When SNL come calling.
Yeah. Now we need New York.
but so you tried. Were you disappointed?
I was really disappointed. I was
Who took
so
your role?
Young.
You know who took your role in the original?
John Savage.
Ah.
John Savage.
I remember heard he was John good too. Savage.
Yeah. It was one of those things where I think Ulu Grosbard was directing, and we met in his apartment at Central Park West. I'm from Western Maryland. Did we mention that? I was so...
Overwhelmed?
Gobsmacked and overwhelmed. Dave, God bless him. He took me out and we played video games and stuff like that. He did everything he could. And then Ulu sat at the table and he said, I just want to hear the play. No acting.
Yeah.
Well, grow up, Bill. Yeah, he wanted my best performance.
Yeah.
And I was very subtle.
And was Mamet upset or not? Did anybody from the original cast get...
No. No. I've gotten to do it again, though. I play at Atlantic here in New York. We did a production that started at the Donmar Warehouse and then went to Atlantic, and I got to play Teach, which is the role in
right.
that thing.
Great. Pacino played it. Everybody played it.
Oh, it's the best play. It's stunning. I remember, too, Dave disappeared. He's a mercurial guy, but he just disappeared. We didn't know where he was in Chicago back in the day.
Why?
We didn't know where he was. Where's Dave? You know, he lived in the Hotel Lincoln in a room half the size of this room. And we all had apartments that we fixed up. You'd know, and Dave gambled. He loved to play cards, which is where American Buffalo came from.
Right.
He'd go uptown and play with this guy named Kenny the Fence. And who had a resale shop and maybe some other things you could
right,
buy there.
Right. And that's where it all happened.
That's where it all happened. And they called him Teach because he was teaching classes at the University of Chicago. And but before that, they had done Sexual Perversity in Chicago, and we did a play called Squirrels, and we had done another play, and we were working on building our own theater. And where's Dave? Nobody knew. We didn't know for 3 or 4 weeks. And he comes back. And I remember he walked in our apartment and he throws this script on the counter with a thud because he typed it, you know, and that's foolscap. It's thicker paper than
I mean, he's Mr. Dialogue. I mean, it's unbelievable, the dialogue.
He flopped it down and he said, give it a read. It's the best play written in the last 50 years. Give it a read. And You know, we were all in the David Mamet camp. We knew that he was the writer of our generation, if not many generations. I read that thing. Oh, God. When you see two actors who have done American Buffalo, they'll start saying the lines to each other.
Really?
They are so delicious, so much fun to play that you just quote the thing.
Yeah. Where did you come when we were talking about, as I read the lines from Shameless, where did you get this feeling of when it comes to the part that you're very important as the actor? Where do you get that? In other words, how do you go from that to being very, you know, I don't have to act that way. I don't on stage or in a movie. I don't have to take it that seriously, whatever you did.
Uh-huh.
Was Mamet demanding that the
Well, Dave taught us about acting, and he started an acting technique, which they still teach at Atlantic Theater Company down in Chelsea, and he called it practical aesthetics. And so it was eminently practical. He, you know, you've all heard it, that what an actor acts is the objective. And right. Dave was famous for saying, don't act the words. You can't act the words. Plus, the words don't mean anything until you say them. I love you can mean anything. You have to ascribe the meaning to it. And where you find the meaning is, what do you want? And that's the objective.
You know, I can understand that. I interviewed Sammy Davis Jr. one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to him about Sinatra. And he had this very famous line about one of the reasons why Sinatra was so important. And it was, he can say the word, the phrase, love you, better than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see, but the way it's he true. Did it.
The songs are running through my head, you know.
The way he did it, and then Sammy said, nobody could do.
Then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like, I love you. His phrasing was magnificent.
Right.
He could phrase the songs, where to take the breath, where to put the beats.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's what Dave did. He just made it practical aesthetics. And so it took all the onus out. I mean, he was famous for saying, you don't have to feel anything.
Yeah.
And for an actor, that's...
That's tough, right?
Heresy.
Yeah.
We think it's all about feelings, but Dave's right. Because the feelings come.
Right.
It's not that the emotions aren't...
So talking
but
about
you can't
that,
control
if, I,
them anyway.
If I moved on to Shameless...
Mm-hmm.
How do you play a drunk Frank Gallagher?
Oh, it's kind of a party trick, you know.
What does that mean?
It's an external.
Because, you know, a lot of people try to overplay it.
Yeah. It's a gag. It's like doing an accent. I have some experience with alcohol, and...
we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. I don't know. I got the speech down, you know, when...
By the way,
when people
there's
are,
an accent there, too, Chicago.
Ah, yeah. I didn't do a Chicago accent. Some people did on the show, but I didn't. But
you were close anyway.
I was close because I started my career there, and I've picked it. I say A.
Right, A, right. I worked there a little bit, so yeah. I know the Billy Goat.
Oh, the Billy Goat. I spent some time in the Billy Goat.
So did I.
That was the journalist hangout,
yeah,
right?
That was Mike Royko's hangout.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. By the way, to me, it was the best news town in the world.
Yeah.
If you were a journalist, it was so good.
Three vibrant, powerful newspapers yeah, going at once.
Exactly. And then all the stations competed. It was the only town I've ever worked in, and I've worked in a lot, where the television news departments actually competed against the newspapers. Usually TV news departments follow what was in the paper that morning.
Yeah.
We competed against them. It yeah. was great.
It's a great town.
It's terrific.
It's a great theater town. It's great for art, music. Come on.
Yeah.
And comedy.
Yeah. So I saw an article recently that you kind of keep up with those people from Shameless.
Yeah. There's a text chain. And
and they're doing pretty well, all those young
yeah,
kids?
Jeremy's.
Well, let's talk about Jeremy, all right? Could you see him as Bruce Springsteen?
Nope, that surprised me. I haven't seen the movie, but...
Neither have I.
I've seen the stills from it. He looks like him, and... We did a Christmas song on Shameless one time, so I happen to know he had to learn how to sing. Jeremy, I hope I'm not busting you. But he did a great job. I've heard it.
Yeah, and, apparently.
Yeah, he's a talented fellow.
And so it didn't surprise you about the bear?
No.
When he did that series?
That landed right in his sweet spot. He's one of those actors who has such an inner thing going on that you come to him. Some actors are in your face. They're just out there. Jeremy's still water running deep. And a great sense about him. When he feels something, it just washes over his face. He can't control it.
So how do you and Felicity Huffman meet? Is it in a play? Is it in a...
We met through Atlantic Theater many years ago, yes. When we started with Dave, when we started that thing, Felicity came and interviewed. And for a brief time, I was her teacher. Ah. But wait, I never touched her, man. I didn't touch her for 10, maybe 20 minutes after the last class. I was on her duck on a June bug.
I mean, you know, we both married younger women, all right? Yeah. I mean, mine's 7, 8 years younger than me.
Mine's seven.
Seven.
Yeah.
No, 13.
That's right. It's my brother's 7 years younger than me.
No, she's 13 wife. Years younger. She's 13. 62. You're 75. I got this. Down.
Thanks. Thank you. I was wondering that. I was going to.
And my wife is 79, and I'm 86.
Yeah. I think it works pretty well.
Yeah. Don't you?
Best thing I ever did, yeah. Man. Marrying that woman. Ugh.
I've read that.
The best.
Now, you're in the same business. My wife and I were in the same business. A lot of times that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Why does it work?
Not a clue.
Come on.
No, I don't recommend this to my friends out there. Don't try this at home. But we talk about our scripts.
Yeah.
We read each other's scripts. Right. We give each other notes. We give each other notes on the performance that we've done. And somehow,
you can be critical of each other.
Yeah. We've certainly overstepped the bounds a couple of times and wounded, but we didn't mean to. And I think we're both, well, first of all, she's so bleeding smart, laser smart. Well, so if she's got a good...
That's the key issue. As my father would say, you married up.
Yeah. Boy, did I ever. So when she's got an idea, I listen. And it's the foundation of our relationship. We met in the theater, and we've been doing it our entire adult lives. One of my daughters, Sophia, is in the tribe. She's an actor, and she's got a movie coming out called Brian, which is adorable. I saw it. And my other daughter, Georgia, is on a law path. She's taking the LSATs these days.
Is she the one at Carnegie? Or
Sophia went to Carnegie Mellon.
Right.
And
my first wife went to Carnegie Mellon. They had a good acting department. Did they still?
Yeah. It's legendary. John Wells went there. They call it the Carnegie Mellon Mafia. They're all over, and they look out after each other. It's really a good thing.
And everybody probably knows about what you and Felicity had to go through in terms of
the scandal
getting into universities and things.
It was rough.
I remember seeing a picture of you at the court with your wife, and it was very endearing. And it must have been a terrible moment for you all.
I don't want to go through those days again. It was rough. I actually don't talk about it a lot.
Okay.
But we're through it. Felicity's still working with this. She had a community service called A New Way of Life.
Ah, good.
Fabulous organization. You don't want to hear a statistic. Something like 90% of the incarcerated men have someone on the outside, a wife, a brother, a family, taking care of the car or your kids or your apartment. What do you think the number is for women?
I have no idea.
It's about 4%. 4%.
Wow.
They got no
one. So nobody on the outside.
Nobody on the outside. And when they let him out of prison, there's nobody waiting.
And so this is the...
A New Way of Life.
Organization that helps. Them,
yep, yep. Meets them at the bus station. They've got their own room for free. There are a couple of rules, but not many. And they won't take federal funding.
I'm amazed that those numbers are for women. I would have thought it would be reversed.
We need prison reform big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
You're going to have this series on Hulu. You play
it. Oh, so cool.
NFL owner.
Yeah.
I mean, what's that like?
Well, I'll let you know. I've done, I did my two scenes in the pilot.
Do you know any NFL owners?
No, but I Googled them all. It was really interesting,
too. Now, are you one of these ultra-rich owners?
Well, they all are.
Yeah, I know.
It comes with the territory. There was a statistic.
In the old days, they weren't that rich because it was a family-owned team. And they only got rich as football got rich.
That's what I was going to say. There's a couple that since the NFL, well, even before, since football became
right.
Football, there are a couple of teams that are still owned by the same family.
Correct.
And they talk about how much they've accrued value.
Yes.
You ready? One of them is 1,500,000
percent
right. increase in yeah. value. And all of them are up in the 50, 60.
Yeah, I mean,
they buy them for $10 million.
It's the Rooney family in Pittsburgh. It's the Mara family in New York. It's the Hallis family in Chicago. Those are the oldest.
Yep, yep, yep. And all the teams are billion-dollar enterprises now. They were bought for millions.
Exactly.
It's a fascinating world, and we've got this great premise. It's a coach. He's got one son on the team. His younger son he doesn't get along with, and guess what? He's the Heisman Trophy winner and the number one draft pick, and the owner and others, we conspire. And so it's Shakespearean.
Terrific.
Also, watching these guys, they cast this thing. I saw a tape. This was just the audition tape.
Right.
These beautiful young men, they say, you know, they take the snap. This is for an audition. And they fire this football like it was shot out of a howitzer.
Did they have real players?
They're all real players, mostly college players. A couple
right.
of NFL guys are on it. But they're going to play real football.
So... when you went to the state of Washington to do Train Dreams, there are a lot of trees.
There's a lot of trees.
I live in Montana. I've got a lot of trees.
Yeah.
I bet I live on a mountain. I probably have 100,000 trees.
Yeah. Do you have the pine bark beetle there?
It's a very interesting thing that you say.
Yeah.
We had it 15, 20 years ago.
Ah.
And it was devastating.
Yeah, it is.
Just trees all of a sudden. Boom, gone.
Spruce.
Within a reed.
Whole mountainsides yeah. brown.
Spruce, because we have a lot of blue spruce mm-hmm. in Montana. And you and Felicity are in a place, a very famous place called Woody Creek, Colorado. And it's famous because a fella named Hunter S. Thompson, the gonzo journalist, made his home there. And you said that Felicity grew up with his kids.
Yeah, she tells a funny story about playing with the kids and gunshots ring out, and the nanny came in and said, "Let's go get ice cream." And
Hunter loved.
He loved his guns.
Loved his guns. I'll tell you a Hunter story. Back in the Watergate era, 1973 or so, when everything was happening, all the great writers from around the country converged on Washington because it was the biggest story ever.
Mm.
Jimmy Breslin would come from New York. Hunter came. All these out-of-town correspondence came. I was doing a local talk show, and I get Hunter to come on the show. And in a 15-minute period, the only time in my life I allowed somebody to drink while being interviewed, he had a six-pack underneath the chair, and in 15 minutes, he drank that whole six-pack, and never got caught on camera, ever. He knew exactly where the red light was. He knew when the camera was on him. And in between, when I'm asking him questions, he's chugging beer. And that was Hunter.
He was something. My Felicity's whole family grew up in Woody Creek, and the kids wanted to do a lemonade stand. So they went to the refrigerator. They got all the stuff, including beer and wine. They were 8 years old, and they set up a thing. And here comes Hunter with the sheriff of Aspen, and they see a lemonade stand, and they pull over, and they go, what do you have? We have lemonade, we have Kool-Aid, we have Coke and Pepsi, we have beer, and we have wine. And without a beat, the sheriff said, I'll take a beer. You want a beer? Yeah. They bought a beer. How much? And they said, we don't know. Gave him $5 for each beer and drove away.
Oh, boy. Hunter was something else.
He really was.
He's just irrepressible.
I mean, yeah, I still go to the Woody Creek Tavern.
That was his hangout.
That first seat there.
Yeah.
It better be empty. It takes chutzpah to sit in that seat. That's Hunter's seat.
I think Woody Harrelson was a friend. I mean, there were a lot. He had a lot of. Mm-hmm. Johnny Depp was a friend. Johnny Depp played him in Fear and Loathing.
When he died, Johnny came. Hunter wanted his ashes to be shot up in a rocket.
In a rocket.
They couldn't afford that, so Johnny got a World War II howitzer.
A big howitzer, and they blew up the ash. They blew the ashes up.
Guess where they blew the ashes?
Back in the house?
My house.
Oh, really?
My house. It went right over the thing. So I'm part of Woody Creek Distillers, and the reason I got involved with it is because they used one of our fields to grow potatoes for the vodka, 100% vodka, potato vodka. So we say there's a little Hunter in every bottle of Woody Creek vodka.
Yeah.
Did I mention I know a little bit about drinking?
Yes, you do. The William H. Macy Reserve, 10-year-old. This is rye whiskey.
Yep.
I've had rye whiskey. I know rye whiskey. I'm kind of a Scotch drinker, but
I'm going to change.
Do you know that rye whiskey started in this country, in Maryland?
Yep, it was called Old Monongahela.
Oh, look at you.
That's me standing in, you guessed it.
Woody Creek.
Woody Creek.
Wow.
Yeah, I heard the story, and I'm passing it on. I hope it's true. When George Washington left office, they bounced his last couple of checks. And so he set about distilling rye whiskey. And he was one of the biggest distillers in the area.
Wow.
Very soon.
So he was broke?
He was broke. And
wow.
Rye whiskey is America's drink. I'm sorry. It's not bourbon. It is America's drink.
Yeah.
And I like it because I'm a Southern boy. I was raised in Georgia. And, but rye whiskey is my drink. You want to taste it? This is 10-year-old.
I usually do a segment called On Par or Off the Rails. In other words,
on par.
Is it good? You know, on par is good. Everything is fine. Off the rails, you know. And so I have a fishbowl full of situations, and we will each pick a few and say whether they are on par, meaning good, relevant, or maybe off the rails and needs to go. And since we have your whiskey, for each one that is off the rails, we'll take a sip, okay?
All right. This could get dangerous.
Yeah. All right, pull a question.
Yeah.
If it's off the rails, we're drinking.
Starting a podcast at 86 years old, on par or off the rails?
That's off the rails.
Here's to you, brother.
Oh, wow.
One of the finest ryes on the market. There are others that are good, but none better.
You know what the good news of that is?
What?
It lingers.
It does. It's got a great mouthfeel. 100% rye whiskey, bottled and bond, 10 years old.
Let's see what I got here. Who knows here what I got. Wearing pajamas to catch a flight. On par or off the rails?
Off the freaking rails. Absolutely. What's wrong with these people?
Isn't it unbelievable?
Man.
Do you know that my father, he would tan my ass if I ever went on a plane without a jacket.
And he's right. First of all, it's not logical. Wear a suit. People will take care of you.
Right.
Look like a schlub and they'll treat you like a schlub.
What about
when you go to a Michelin restaurant and there's some asshole there with sweatpants and a baseball cap on?
How about the other night when we go to the theater, we saw Jonathan Groff in the Bobby Darin play.
Ah.
Jeans, people are wearing jeans.
No, you can wear jeans.
No, but they're wearing cutoffs.
That's,
I mean, one of those. I'm in there in a tie and a jacket, and
yeah.
I am. There may be 50 out of 1,000 people.
Yeah.
Dressed.
I don't feel compelled to wear a tie, but I dress up for the theater.
The only.
And you know, I'm a hippie. I was the guy who said, why not?
Right.
You know, I've seen pictures of myself, but we broke all the rules. I'm coming back to your comportment counts.
I think so. You know where I saw it, though? I was so excited. Connie and I went to the American Ballet Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was dressed up.
Love it.
Everyone was dressed up.
You mentioned Soul on Fire. We shot it in St. Louis, and they had a big opening there. In a huge theater, 2,000 people dressed to the nines.
Oh, isn't that great?
I just loved it.
Talking about Jack Buck, who you play in this. Jack broadcast the St. Louis Cardinals for 25 years, and he also, for anybody who knows about broadcasting and baseball, maybe one of the greatest lines in the world in the 1988 World Series, when Kirk Gibson, who was barely walking, comes into the bottom of the ninth, hits the home run to win the game for the Dodgers, and Jack Buck's line was, "I can't believe what I just saw," and it lives in memory.
Wow. He also said, "You can start celebrating now."
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. He's in the
Baseball Hall of Fame,
Broadcasters Hall of Fame.
Right.
The Soul on Fire.
And Joe, by the way, Joe Buck, who's broadcasting.
Who
now.
Is going to be on The Land, the TV series about
good.
The NFL.
Yeah.
I just saw his name in the,
oh, good. Yeah.
In the next script.
Joe, you know, does fine work.
I got to meet him. But
His dad.
Jack Buck was at a cocktail party, and he heard about this kid. This is what the Soul on Fire is about. Heard about this kid who was burned over 90% of his body and was going to die that night. And he went to the hospital. The kid was in an induced coma. Did this on his own, didn't know him, and said to the kid, "You're going to pull through. You're going to be fine. And when you do, we're going to have John O'Leary Day at the stadium. And you'll come out and you'll sit beside me in the box." And they think, John O'Leary thinks somewhere that got into his brain. And he did pull through, and they did have John O'Leary Day, and that's the...
Wow. That's the theme of the
that's
movie.
That's the theme of the movie.
Wow. Okay.
Let's do more questions so
sure.
we can drink
yeah,
more.
Yeah, of course. I'm up for that.
I love that you thought this was a fishbowl. Doing an interview with sunglasses indoors, on par or off the rails? Off the rails.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Why is that? Why do so many?
Jack Nicholson can do it, but nobody else.
Yeah. Do you ever work with him?
No, I want to.
What do you think makes him so good?
He's an immensely talented actor, but I'll zero in on one thing. One of the things I love about actors, all my favorite actors share this too. They don't give a shit what you think about them.
Wow.
They don't give a shit how they look, wow. how this is going to sound.
Wow.
They have their objective. They go for it. And if you don't like it, that's just fine with them. He just
you know
doesn't
something?
Care.
Believe it or not, in my own profession, a lot of critics over the years.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, so be it, you know.
And that's why you're here.
I'll go about my business. And even I'll tell you a funny story. There was a great media critic for the Washington Post named Tom Shales.
Oh, yeah.
So Tom Shales won the Pulitzer Prize. And I'm doing this show called A Current Affair years ago, which is a tabloid journalism show. And he took me to task in a column one time. He used every S word there could be. Smarmy, sordid, you name it. Everything snarky, everything. So I call up my father, who was the sports writer for the Washington Post for 75 years. And I said, "Dad, don't let Mom read this. Shales has just blistered me. It's really bad." And he says, "Well, don't worry about it, son. Go about your business." I said, "Dad." He says, I helped to hire Tom Shales here at the Washington Post. I said, yeah, Dad, but I'm your son. He says, yeah, son, but good writers are hard to find.
Father.
Only a father.
And you said thank you.
Thank you very much. On my way. All right, let's do one more here. Frank Gallagher needed a DNA test on The Maury Show. On par or off the rails? Was there ever a theme in the show in 11 years with Frank and other women?
There was. I'm afraid that's on par.
Oh, wow.
Talk about bodacious writing. They brought on this little kid, a little black kid. And the thing was, he was part of the family. He was my son.
Right.
Until finally, with episode 3, someone says, how does this work? And I think Frank said something to the effect of, well, my ex-wife, she got around. You never know. And so they did have a DNA test, and he's my son.
Right. That's right. He was a member of the family. Yeah. I remember that. I love the opening line with the toilet.
That sequence.
The sequence.
Genius. Everything that goes on in the bathroom. Most families would say it's the dining room table. For the Gallaghers, it's the toilet.
Exactly. All right, we'll finish up with this. And then I'm going to have you play the ukulele.
Uh-oh.
Calling your publicist before your spouse after a bad headline. On par or off the rails?
Off the rails.
Yeah. Have you ever had a bad notice?
Oh, Lord.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't imagine William H. Macy.
Okay, my favorite. I got Simonized. John Simon called me an aging dead end kid.
Really?
And my friends, God bless them, had a T-shirt.
Well, he was a tough critic. He was John Simon.
Yeah, he was too mean.
And he called you a what?
An aging dead end kid. And my friends had a T-shirt made and gave it to me, and I wore it with pride.
When people look at you, I mean, do you agree that you have kind of a mournful facade?
Yeah, hangdog, yeah. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. There is a pretty exhaustive record of me growing up and growing old and falling apart. You know, there's a film of that. And yeah, back in the day, I've always been an odd-looking guy. Felicity was on Desperate Housewives, which was the biggest thing.
That was time.
They went from the pilot to the front, to the cover of Time magazine in a year, and won all the Emmys. And that same year, she got nominated for an Oscar for Transamerica. It was something. She can walk down the street with impunity. I wear a motorcycle helmet where you can see this much of me, and people go, Frank!
You're kidding.
No.
Frank, I get the feeling you never felt typecast.
No.
Because I know a lot of actors who are afraid to get into these long-running series because they'll be typecast forever.
I was worried about that, but I'm a lucky guy. I had a pretty big filmography before I got into it. But it's true that after you do a series that's successful and it runs for a bunch of years, you're kind of in jail for a little while, because until you grow a little older, until people forget, they'll go, hey, Frank's the district attorney.
Yeah.
They're letting Frank be the doctor.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Frank's Jack Buck.
Yeah. You'll notice after I did Shameless, I did a lot of pieces where, I had a lot of makeup on. I don't know if this is going to work out. This is more of a souvenir ukulele.
Oh, you got that.
Oh, my God.
Have you played for all your life or what?
I played guitar since I was a kid.
Oh, you did? Oh, wow.
But, my hands hurts like hell, especially this finger. I can't bar on a guitar, and anybody can play this. Also, it's cooler.
Cooler?
Oh, and people that play a ukulele, they're a little cooler than
really?
Everybody. Oh, sure. Everybody knows. Okay. Rye whiskey is America's risky.
Right.
I love a good old-fashioned, not a new old-fashioned. I'm an old-fashioned guy. So if you make it right, we'll hang out all night. Raise your glass. Here's mud in your eye. You put some rocks in a glass. Now, please don't laugh, but make sure your ice is cold. A shake or two of Angostura, but not before you pour a little sugar so it's sweet and bold. If you don't muddle the fruit, it's like muddle the fruit. It's like wearing a suit without putting on a shirt or tie. Use a fine old bourbon, but if I could put a word in, you might try my Woody Creek rye. I love a good old-fashioned, not a new old-fashioned. I'm not shy to tell you why. I believe the old trope about things that ain't broke, so I'm an old-fashioned guy. Bop it up and up and up and up. I'm an old-fashioned guy.
Very good. Very good. I think we all can agree, whether it's Train Dreams, The Running Man, Soul on Fire, Woody Creek, you keep finding ways to surprise us. I mean, it's amazing the way you've not only been so successful, but it's been a long career.
Yes.
So congratulations.
Thank you, Maury. This
Woody
is great.
Creek, Rye Whiskey. There you go. Thanks for being on par.
Mm. Ah, nectar of the gods. Makes you better looking and smarter, too. We can't put that on the label, but it's true.
We'd like everybody to sign a golf ball. Terrific.
Okay, here's one for you. Guy's playing golf. It's the best day he's ever had. He's 5 under par on his course. Eagles and birdies. Phone rings. It's the doctor. He says, it's your wife. You got to come right away. He tees off one more time. First hole in one he's ever had. He finishes all 18 holes, gets in the car, races to the hospital. Doctor says, you didn't come when I called, did you? He said, no, but doc, you got to understand. He said, you played all 18 holes, didn't you? He said, yeah, but listen to me. And he said, well, forget golf, pal. There's no more golf for you. From now on, it's wheelchairs and bedpans, lifting your wife in and out of bed. There's no more golf for you. The guy goes, oh, my God. Doctor says, I'm just kidding you. She died 2 hours ago.
That is a golf joke.
That's a golf.
That is definitely a golf joke. It's like my wife's line is, when I want to have sex, I drop my husband off at the course.
Did she make that up? That's fabulous. Yeah. There you go.
Very good. Terrific.
This is lovely.
Yeah.
I'm so pleased to be here.
Yeah, me too. You have no idea.
Well, back at you. This is bucket list shit.
If you've had as much fun as I did, make sure you subscribe to On Par on YouTube and tap that little bell so you don't miss a thing. And if you like to listen on the go, we're on Apple, Spotify, everywhere you get your podcasts. Hit the follow button. On Par with me, Maury Povich, is brought to you by Mopo Productions, A Better Life Media, and Radley Studios. With executive producers, me, Maury Povich, Holly J. Mirabella, and Christian Thompson. Directed by Seth Dean.